Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Second hour of Upstate Outdoors. It's still raining here in the Upstate, or at least rainy. And I think they did the weather side on that. It's supposed to clear up. Is it supposed to clear up tomorrow?
Yeah. I ain't saying nothing.
But it's going to get windy.
I ain't saying nothing.
I'd rather have rain than wind. I would rather have overcast, drizzly. I mean, not okay. Pouring down rain, okay. But I would rather have soggy and like this.
Okay, you've had
wind.
Like 47 days of this. Okay, give us a break, dog.
Man, I don't like the wind. I can fish and stuff like this.
I get it, but
I don't like the wind. I don't like heavy wind. I like a little bit of wind.
Okay.
Anyway,
these dry up.
There's my forecast. We're gonna have State Senator Stephen Goldfinch from District 43, I think. Down around Merle's Inlet. He's the author of Senate Bill 489, which you've heard about, the Coyote Bounty Bill. And then we're gonna have some DNR news and talk about some prescribed burning, which. I don't mean to put this off, because prescribed burning is something that needs to be done. And I think if we get into that a little bit, I think they're doing everything they can to lessen the impact on wildlife, especially wild turkeys.
Agreed.
Then we're going to get into the calendar of events. And our parting shot for today will be about a guy up in North Carolina. I think it's North Carolina or Tennessee, that was out looking for some ginseng. Right? He was out looking for ginseng.
They call it sing.
Yeah.
They don't call it ginseng. They call it sing.
And they thought a bear got him, but it was actually that whatever meth comes in that got him.
Battery acid.
Battery acid. But first, we need to jump into...
We cooking squirrel. And...
Do the noise. Now do the noise and then... Or do the noise again and I'll finish it up. That's grease.
Absolutely.
Squirrels in the grease.
So, to all you fine people that weathered today's weather to be part of Carolina Farm and Wildlife's Cracking Nut First Annual Squirrel Tournament, God help you.
You know, they got a little bit of heat about that. I saw on their Facebook
page.
Can
you believe that?
People complain about, well, I don't think you should be killing squirrels just for a contest. And I said, hey, Springer, come down there and fry them all up for you. Y'all need them.
Man, I'm telling you, our whole... climate and everything is they're wanting to change it.
Culture.
Man,
you're talking about culture.
You know what I'm trying to say, yeah. Man? Dude, we've been doing this. This is what we do.
Yeah.
Okay, you come here and you put that kind of garbage. Stay wherever you came from and go back, okay? Leave us alone, okay?
Yeah. Go back to Alabama. No, they do that. They're cool with that in Alabama.
We eat the brains in Alabama.
Yeah,
but anyway,
right.
I digress. First of all, if I'm going to clean that many squirrels, all I do, I have two tools. I have a really sharp knife, small blade, and a pair of pruning shears, okay? I take the squirrel, make a cut across the top of the back of the squirrel. I dig in there with fingers from my right hand and my left hand, and what do I do, Philip Gentry? And you would be great because you have such really long arms. And just go the snatcheroo, baby.
Snatcheroo.
The snatcheroo, and I pull the
skin. You gut them first?
No, I don't even fool with the guts. I don't even fold them with gutting them. I just pull that skin all the way back to the ends of their feet to where it starts to get hard.
Yeah.
I clip them off there, make an incision at the joints, at the shoulders and the back legs. Next squirrel. Same thing, repeat.
Oh.
Same thing, repeat. Same thing. Never fool with the guts, okay? If
okay.
I'm going to have to clean a bunch of squirrels.
So the guts come out with it, with the skin.
When you do the skin, the skin comes off, okay?
Yeah.
And the guts are still... inside, okay? You're not even fooling with that, all right?
Okay.
You're just getting legs. You're getting hind legs and the front legs.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying, Philip? I'm not even fooling with what little bit of meat's full of, because if I got a bunch of squirrels...
you ain't getting into the rib
I
meat.
I ain't worried about it.
Okay.
So that's what I do. It's very simple, okay? And once I get the squirrel legs, and depending on how many you have and how hungry you are, You do it like this. You need 2 eggs, a tablespoon of ketchup, salt and pepper, a can of beer, and Zatarain spicy chicken fry batter, okay? Because everybody says squirrel tastes like what?
Chicken.
Bingo, okay, and some butter, all right? So what we do is we beat the eggs in a medium bowl, add the ketchup, salt, and pepper to taste. Add a half a can of beer and drink the rest. Get you some. Mix well. Put some of the Zatarain's batter in a shallow dish. Melt several tablespoons of butter in a skillet over medium-low heat, or what I'll use is a fry daddy.
Yep.
Okay, I'm doing a lot of squirrels, so I'm just using a fry daddy, like I'm doing fish or something. All right, get your heat up like you need it to. Dip the squirrels into the egg mixture, and then roll it around in the Zatarain's just like you would do chicken. Repeat for thicker coatings if you want a nice, crisp, extra crispy coating. And add to the fry daddy or the skillet till golden brown. And all I do is serve it with mashed potatoes and some cornbread. Bread or biscuits, and there you have it. So
biscuits and squirrel.
Yeah, if I have to,
gotta have biscuits.
If I'm cooking a lot of squirrel, it's almost like a fish fry, except that it's got bone in it. All right.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I do, and I can clean them quick, and they fry really quick. You know, it's almost like a fish fillet. Let's go to the text line and catch up.
Yeah, because there was somebody that posted about squirrel, about her first time cleaning
squirrel.
Yeah,
that was right at the beginning, and I'm going to get to that.
I'm going to let you read through that because it jumps around so bad.
It jumps around. Okay, let's see. Here we go. Hey, let's see. I'm a girl. Okay, hold on. It's still moving around. This thing is crazy, but I'm fixing to get a hold of it here. All right, here we go. I'm a girl. I told a friend of mine who was an NRA recruiter about my first attempt at skinning a squirrel. He laughed hysterically. I thought he was going to need an ambulance. He shared my story with everyone, evidently including NRA headquarters, and she got emails from all across the nation on skinning squirrels. She said the only person she thinks that didn't write her was Ted Nugent.
Yeah. Ted just bites the head off of, right?
You know, Ted is Ted, and God bless Ted, okay? Another one is Derek says hello from Brevard, and he's having to listen to us. He's going to have to podcast us because the radio in the mail truck ain't working today. I have a friend that lives on Moody Bridge Road next door to 900 acres of conservation land owned by Clemson, and they frequently have bears come down to their back door. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, that'd be cool to have the tall pines WMA and have somebody go in there and take a bear off of it.
I mean, it's very highly possible.
Yeah.
Trust me. I mean, after the DNR people told me how many bears are around here, wouldn't surprise me a bit, okay? That was a real good crappy seminar Philip gave at Cabela's. I learned a lot. I like the dock shooting fishing rod. It'll help with bank fishing, too. So there you go,
PG. Yep, dock shooting. Love it. Especially, I like doing it out of a kayak.
I bet you do. All right, and this is from Frank in Greer. He said, the herds have never been back right after Hurricane Hugo.
You're talking about the turkey population.
Herds
of turkey.
Herds of turkeys, okay? I'm sorry. Flocks of turkeys there, Frank, have never been back right after Hurricane Hugo, wiping them out on the coast. And they trapped here to replace them. And he also said he's seen fire ants kill an entire nest of turkeys.
Yep. Yep.
Pulse, so I can believe it. Do you have a recipe for saltwater catfish? Woo! I caught about 50 of them one night in Gulf Shores, Alabama, but everyone said they were no good to throw them back. Well, here's what I will tell you, Texter. If you are really...
We're talking about sail cats.
Actually, it's not the sail cat. It's just the old bottom dweller catfish, okay? They don't have the big sail gaff on them, okay?
Okay.
You can eat those, Texter, and you would skin them just like a catfish, and yes, they are edible. I wouldn't keep them froze over much more than a few months, but they're not the greatest tasting catfish in the world. But if you use a lot of stuff like ranch dressing to marinate them in and whatnot, and then batter them up real good, they're not bad. So
so it's very much like king mackerel. It's really not fit to eat, but people do it anyway.
And Texter, I can see where my homeboys down there in Gulf Shores, Alabama would say, ain't no good, throw them away. Well, the problem with that is they're spoiled. Okay, they're absolutely spoiled.
Yeah.
They're used to snapper, grouper, flounder.
Edible fish.
And they don't let them all have to move inland like I had to. And
what are you saying? We don't have good eating fish here?
No, I'm just saying... Okay, all right. I could see the thought process is going through there. Because I was one of those spoiled folks down there for many, many years. And took a granted for it. And now, I appreciate those old days.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, anyway. Yeah, you can eat them saltwater catfish. Just, skin them just like you would a regular freshwater cat.
I was looking, and I can't find it here. Maybe I find it. There was something about a sail cat. There was a part of it that you looks like a pearl or something like that.
It's in a skull.
In a skull.
Yeah.
They make earrings out of.
Yes, they do.
There you go. So nothing else, you make earrings out of. Let's go to our break. When we come back, we're going to ring up our buddy, Senator Stephen Goldfinch, and talk about the Coyote Bounty Bill.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 1063 WORD, where we will educate you on everything that you really can't use much for, but it's good advice anyway, so stay tuned.
Well, during the show today, State Senator Tom Corbin had the easy interview because all he had to do was take credit for getting some land purchased and donated to DNR, and he was like, yeah. So we've got another state senator on the line with us, Senator Stephen Goldfinch, and he's got, I think, a little bit more uphill battle in a piece of legislature that he has authored. It's Senate Bill 489, not like all of you keep up with the numbers, but it's the Coyote Bounty Bill. And Senator Goldfinch, welcome back to Upstate Outdoors.
Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here.
So there's been a lot of talk, and anytime it's kind of like alligators and bears and coyotes. Anytime it comes up in the news, people are quick to jump to their opinion or to polarize. But I don't think anybody would disagree with the fact that coyotes in South Carolina are causing quite a stir.
Well, you would think that, but quite honestly, I've been attacked by the PETA folks for the last month or so. So I don't really feel like that at this point. But the people we surround ourselves with, the rational-minded, reasonable-minded people, most definitely see a problem.
Yeah, and in what we're faced with, and of course, those of us who are involved in the outdoors and understand is we've got an animal, the coyote, that is not native to South Carolina, and they've gotten here. I don't know that we can actually lay a finger and say this is exactly how this happened, but their numbers are increasing in the state, and they are causing a decline in some of our native wildlife, specifically the species, the wild turkeys, and also the white-tailed deer.
Yeah, that's correct, as well as house pets. I don't know how the upstate's faring right now, but I know that coastal municipalities are struggling with house pets being eaten, mauled, and even people in my district are now feeling fearful to let their kids outside if you got any woods in the backyard. So we're sort of in a bad spot in South Carolina right now with the number of coyotes we have. The best estimate we have is over 350,000 coyotes in South Carolina right now. That's a lot of hungry mouths that need to be fed and, in my opinion, need to be killed.
And that issue's been addressed by DNR, and they had a coyote, sort of a coyote bounty program that worked in with coming out with the deer tags. And DNR even got heat over that. They said, well, if DNR would quit trapping and releasing coyotes, we wouldn't have this problem. But the actual truth of that matter was they trapped 12 coyotes and tagged them as part of that program. And that is the only time that DNR has released coyotes in the state.
Yeah, that's correct. DNR has not been releasing coyotes. That's never been the case. You mentioned earlier, we don't really know how coyotes got here, and we got a pretty good idea how they got here. They got here by fox pen. Those guys drove out of state, picked them up, brought them back into state, and you get some escapees, and that's how they got here as best we can imagine. We don't think they ran from Colorado or Montana. We think that the fox pen guys brought them in. But DNR has definitely not been promulgating or propagating or expanding the range of coyotes. That's not their mission. Although we do disagree, DNR doesn't see right now. DNR doesn't see coyotes as a threat, and I think that's just absolutely foolish. I really do.
Well, talk about the bill that you've authored, Senate Bill 489. Tell us a little bit about the tenets of it and the funding for it, and what it's going to address.
Okay. So, I mean, I think we started off with the premise that most South Carolinians that are reasonable-minded see coyotes as a threat to our native wildlife and our house pets. So what are we going to do about them? DNR's perspective is that we're going to reach a homeostasis with coyotes. That means that the coyotes, the deer, the turkeys, even the house pets, we'll all reach a number at some point in time that will stabilize. We might not be comfortable with that number, but that's DNR's perspective from a biological standpoint. So I asked Charles Ruth directly. I said, Charles, does that mean that, you know, one day we can only kill one deer or one turkey or maybe even zero deer or zero turkeys? And he looked at me straight in the face and said, yeah, that's a possibility, but that's just where we're going to be.
Wow.
And, yeah.
I find that to be unacceptable. DNR's standpoint, their position is just an untenable position here. I think DNR should be in the business of expanding rights for sportsmen instead of detracting them. And right now, their chief biologist is taking a stance. You know, it may be an interesting stance from a biology standpoint. It ain't an interesting stance from a sportsman standpoint at all. You know, we've seen a precipitous decline in the deer and the turkey population in the last 10 years since we've had a real coyote problem. And DNR's own study, they spent $500,000 last year on this turkey study, showed that 81% of the hens that were bred never made it to nest. 81% of the hens that they started tracking never made it to nest. That doesn't mean that they were bred and got to nest and the poults never hatched. That means the turkeys died. Okay, and there was no turkey season in that particular time period. And yet, DNR's perspective coming out of that study was that the hunters were the problem. All right, tell me how that works. When 81% of the hens die, how does that work that the hunter's the problem? We don't kill hens. Number one, we don't kill hens. Number two, 19%, 20% that actually make it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just having a tremendous disconnect right now with DNR over this issue. It's clear that we've got an egg eater issue. It's clear that we've got a prescribed fire management issue that we've got to deal with, habitat management issue. But it's clear to me that turkeys are getting eaten and something's eating them.
And we haven't even touched on the deer populations and the number of fawns that are being taken by coyotes, you know, right after they're born.
It's about the same rate. Almost 80% of the fawns are eaten, at least on that one piece of property down in Savannah, the Savannah River site where they tested. Almost 80% of the fawns were eaten by coyotes. So, I mean, what do you think that does to the population over the years? And yet DNR's position is the sportsman is the issue. We've got to cut the sportsman days. We got to cut the sportsman amount of deer and turkeys that they can kill. That just isn't right to me. I mean, I agree we need to do something. And maybe the sportsmen need to participate in the continued conservation. But don't y'all think, if you're with me, I mean, don't you think that we ought to attack the issue instead of the sportsmen? The issue is clearly coyotes.
Yeah,
I agree. There may be a mixture. You know, there may be a mixture that we may need to do more fire or less fire during spring. We may need to do, you know, make sure that we're cutting saw timber and you know early growth with switchgrass is coming up. We may need to work on education for hunters. But great day when the only priority, the only suggestion coming out of a $500,000 study that shows 81% of the hens aren't making a nest, the only priority is to slow the hunter down. That's just wrong.
Well, as far as the coyote bounty program, how will that be funded and what effect do you think that will actually have on the coyote population?
Okay. The coyote bounty program that is in my piece of legislation says that $1 will be added to the hunting license of the in-state sportsman. It also, right now, it currently reads $1 for out-of-state sportsmen, but I'm planning on taking that to $5. You know, I just don't think if you're willing to travel here and pay $50 or $60 on a license or even $100 on a license, I don't think the $5 is going to scare you away and keep you from coming here. And I, quite honestly, the sportsmen, have always been willing to pay for the conservation of a species. We've always done that, you know, from duck stamps to deer tags to turkey tags. We've always been willing to step up and do what we need to do, our part. And I just don't think a dollar is too much to ask. In fact, most people I know would be willing to pay a lot more than a dollar, but I don't want to overdo it. So the money is coming from the sportsman himself. We're willing to pay for it, and I think we should step up and conserve that species. So it, right now, the way that it works is we're going to raise about $300,000 with the dollar. When I increase the out-of-state to $5, that's going to make it closer to $500,000. And at $75, you can do the math. I don't have a calculator in front of me, but at $75 per coyote, $500 divided by 75, you can figure out where we are on how many coyotes we could pay for to take out of the population. And then it's a very simple process. When it runs out of money, the program stops and it, you know, starts again the next year whenever it's refunded with the dollar from the purchase of the hunting licenses. So,
one of the questions I have, Senator, here is in looking at the bill in the way that it stands, the bounty is paid for each adult coyote that is removed from the state. Does that mean that the coyote is at a dead or alive type situation, or is that something where the coyote has to be killed before the bounty is paid?
Has to be killed before the bounty is paid. I also have a bill that eliminates live transfer, which is, I did that for this purpose and to bring DNR to the table. DNR disagrees. We need a bounty. DNR will have to come to the table if I eliminate live transfer. I'm flexible on that issue, but I got to get DNR to the table. So the answer to your question is, if you passed everything I got right now, then it would have to be a dead coyote. The reasoning behind the end state is because we've studied all the other states that have done bounties. Utah undoubtedly has the most successful bounty, and some of the fraud issues they've had in Utah is people just trying to bring them from over state lines, sell them. So, we've got a system that Utah has worked out that we're going to implement here if the bill passes to prevent any fraud.
And I think that's part of it, because we talked about early in the interview that the reason that we have so many is because of live transport. Would the bill address and make that practice illegal? Because I know during the current trapping season that trappers can actually relocate coyotes and they can sell them. And I think that's perpetuating the problem.
Well, I do too, quite honestly. A lot of those guys have reached out to me and expressed an interest in this idea. They believe that they take enough out of the population to make up for that issue. And maybe they do, but I've got an issue. If I think the state's policy should be every coyote is a dead coyote. We shouldn't continue to perpetuate a live transfer policy. I do understand, the Foxpen guys take 5,000 to 10,000 coyotes out of the population every year. They claim that almost all of them die in the pens, which is a separate ethical issue, whether you believe in that or not, and whether that's right or not. Mm-hmm. And the dogs literally tear them to pieces in the pens. So, but completely separate issue. The point is, allowing the live transfer and putting them in the pens, taking 5,000 to 10,000 out of the population every year, is that worth the live transfer policy standing? I would rather have a dead transfer policy. Any coyote needs to be dead, and we're going to pay a bounty for them. But maybe there's a way. I don't want to foreclose on the possibility of there being a way to do both. I need to stay flexible on that issue right now to make sure we have the most impact.
And so this bounty would be paid whether the coyote was trapped or whether it was hunted.
Correct.
Okay. So that I think, if you're looking at this is going beyond what DNR was trying to do, getting hunters to, add the sport. This is actually, let's take these animals out of the population that we've got.
That's right. Yep.
Awesome. Yep.
I like it. I like it, Senator Stephen.
Now, what kind of support are you seeing in the legislature for this bill that you've authored?
Well, you said in the legislature. I'm gonna answer a different question. In the general population, there's huge support. Other than obviously the PETA people, crazy PETA people, huge support by hunters and non-hunters alike in the general population. In the General Assembly, you got people that are supportive, but they're hesitant because DNR is hesitant. You know, most people in the General Assembly aren't true sportsmen. They don't know the woods the woods or the ocean or the river like you and I do. They're not out there all the time like you and I do, and they rely heavily on DNR and DNR's perspective, as you would think that they should. But this is just an issue where the biologists are ruling the roost. And I just think, it's not a fun experiment to me. It's not a fun experiment to think that we're going to lose our deer and our turkey hunting rights because some biologist thinks we're going to reach homeostasis. That's not fun to me, and that's not fun to sportsmen around the state. And so, the support in the General Assembly is tentative because of DNR's position. I hope we can change that.
Yeah.
Well done.
We've been talking to Senator Stephen Goldfinch, author of the Coyote Bounty Bill. Senator, we really appreciate you being on the show with us. And if you folks, this is going to be a big issue coming up for the future of our deer and turkey herds. And so I would encourage you to get behind this, know what you believe and go with it. Because if you're a deer hunter and a turkey hunter, I think coyotes are a big part of the problem with the population decline. So, Senator, thanks for being on the show with
us.
And keep up the good work.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
All right, brother. Wow.
Let's go to our break. When we come back, we'll talk about talking about DNR. We'll talk about some DNR issues that are in the news today.
And, Sue, I'm going to try to get you on the phone right after these breaks. 106.3 WORD, Upstate Outdoors, Tommy and Phillip. Stay tuned.
All right, we got a short segment here, and we're going to go to Sue from TR. Sue, welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Hey there. I love listening to y'all. I do not hunt. I do not fish, but you guys are darned entertaining.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
You should see us in person.
I never have.
Well, next time we're at Cabela's, come on by and see us.
Yep.
Okay, I love Cabela's.
Okay. Go ahead, Miss Sue.
We've got some acres up above Traveler's Rest, had working on clearing it over the last few years, had house built, moved in August. Now I'm putting in a garden this spring. Apparently, we've moved in where deer love to hang out. We've got several families that live in our yard. How do I keep them away from the garden? Is there anything they don't like, smells or something?
Well, the issue with that, I mean, obviously a fence is going to be number one, and you wouldn't believe
they can jump fences.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, they can jump fences, so it would have to be more than just, I mean, we're talking probably
15 foot. I'm saying 15 foot, seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, golly, okay.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, so physical barriers would be number one. As far as scents and all that, those may work for a short period of time, but like anything, they'll get accustomed to that. And they'll get over that fear. I mean, I've seen people out in rural areas putting up pie pans or anything, stuff like that. So I don't know that I really have a surefire answer to the question. Is this someplace that you reside there that you're going to be around a lot? The more human scent that's out there, the more that you're around it. I mean, of course, I say that, and I've seen deer where they know you're just out there farming and you have no intention to hurt them, they'll follow a tractor around. So,
oh yeah, they do. They like us.
Yeah, yeah. So you
never fed them, but they like to hang out with us.
Yeah, and I hate to say this since you say you don't hunt or anything, but you put a couple of them down, they start to not like you after that. But
he's not kidding. Yeah. And maybe if you don't hunt, maybe if there's some way you could allow somebody to come in and bow hunt real close to your property. A little bit, just to take a few out, then it does make a difference.
Yeah, because they will definitely take a toll out on they will eat just about anything.
Yes.
Anything that you take time to cultivate and plant, and that's flowers, shrubs, or whatever, especially
gone.
When it's green, they'll come in there and eat it. Even when they have other stuff to eat, you're like, why are they eating my flowers? They got plenty of acorns and stuff, but they like that freshly cultivated
stuff.
Yes,
they do.
Nice. Okay.
All right, Miss Sue. I hope to see you soon, and we'll be the two ugly guys right at the entrance of Cabela's there when you come to see us, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling, sweetheart. All right, Philip.
We have another caller in?
Oh, okay. Where's he at on two?
We got Mike from him, and he's got some advice for keeping deer out. Mike,
go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, where were you 5 minutes ago?
I was listening to you guys and I had to turn the radio down and run and grab my cell phone.
There you go.
Well, what's your idea?
This is what the deal is, and it works, Bubba.
Okay.
I got this from a guy out of Kentucky probably 40 years ago. You know this, it's a knitting yarn, it's thread, you know?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Knit with?
Yes, sir.
You get you some of that. It's got to be wool, completely wool knitting thread. In yellow in color. Put you up some stakes around a garden or whatever you want to keep the deer out of. Put you about two strands, one about 2 foot high and one about 3 or 4 foot high. And a deer will not crawl under it and he will not jump over it.
Now, why is that?
Because it's got to
be yellow,
Mike.
And it's got to be wool. Wonder what is it about that they don't like?
I don't know. I don't worry. You know, maybe it actually gets wet one time or something. And, you know, maybe wool has something similar to a canine or a coyote smell or something.
Yep.
But I've told several people that farms up here in the Inman area, and they put it around their cornfields and crowder peas and the strawberry patches, that they quit going in.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
I'd have to check that out. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, Mike. That's
so
some good input.
Sue from Traveler's Rest, if you're listening,
there you go. It's
two strands of yellow wool thread. Put that around your garden. And, Mike, thanks for your call. Great information.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's old wise tale or something. But he said it works.
Hey, if it works.
I mean, you know.
What are you going to do?
I've always had a deer too dang gum scared to come around my garden.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Don't go over there. You'll die.
Yeah, that's Springer's territory there. We're going to get our break. When we come back, Springer's going to bring us a calendar of events, and we'll wrap up today's show with our parting shot.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Tommy and Phillip bringing it to you real. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. The end of the show is right here in front of us, and it's the time when Springer does our calendar of events.
All right, we're going to start with next weekend. Starting on March the 1st, the QDMA Piedmont branch will be having its 8th annual Spring Classic at the Indigo Hall in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And for more information on that, you can contact our buddy Bart Littlejohn at 864-585-0935. Or go to our Facebook page. People, please listen. Facebook page, Upstate Outdoors, has got all these listed. You just have to scroll for them a little bit. And where it says hit interested, it gives you a whole lot of detail about it. So that's March the 1st. March the 2nd, we got the Kids Weekend at Cabela's. It's part of their Spring Fishing Classic. They will actually have a pond inside Cabela's that the kiddies can fish in. So that looks like a whole lot of fun. And in that same week, on March the 5th, they've got a antler scoring with South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, also at Cabela's. So be sure to, if you got a big buck, you're not sure what it score, you can bring it up to Cabela's on that date, and they'll put the tape measure to it. Coming up also on March the 7th, we have another QDMA Foothills Branch Oyster Roast going on at the Brewery 85 in Greenville. It's going to be at the, where's that? Six somewhere court. Y'all know where it's at. It's the Brewery 85 in Greenville. Come on. That's going to be March 7th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. For more information, call John at 864-414-1879. And got another one coming up on the 9th, and that's going to be the Lake Murray 4th Annual Sportsman Banquet, part of QDMA. That will be at Celebrations, 26704 Augusta Highway in Leesville. And for more information, contact Josh at 803-582-9654. And our busy, busy buddy, Mr. Bass Chaplain Chris Wells, will be doing a wild game supper at Mount Lebanon Baptist Church on March the 9th. Doors open at 5:30. We'll start at 6 p.m. And if you want some more information on that, go to our Facebook page or call Melvin at 864 416-326-3251. And I've got a couple more on here. Coming up on March the 21st, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation Greenville chapter will present a night at Saskatoon's. Going to have a gun raffle and some other good stuff going on there at Saskatoon's. And that is also on our Facebook page, so please feel free to go there and click, and it will give you even more information than I am able to read. Coming up on March the 21st, we have the Upstate Sportsman's Banquet. All right, and that's going to be tickets available. Let's see. Let me blow this up so I can see it. That's going to be at the Bushy Creek Baptist Church on March the 21st. That is also listed on our Facebook page, so please check into that. Coming up on March the 30th, we have Antique Fishing Tackle Show, sponsored by Carolina Antique Tackle Collectors. We'll be going on at the Crown Plaza in Greenville, 851 Congaree Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Call our buddy Hack, 864-380-3129, if you're interested. And that's the calendar of events for this week, Philip Gentry.
Thank you very much. And we'd also like to point out, I guess, on a calendar of event, we're going to have Allison Rock from Greer CPW.
I was going to get to that
You always say Allison Roush. I don't know how she pronounces her last name.
I don't know. We'll ask her.
Yeah, we'll ask her. She's actually going to be here in the studio with us
next
week.
Well, that's great. That's great.
During the second hour. And she is, it's time to promote the Greer Lions Club
Fishing Tournament.
Fishing tournament on Lake Robinson.
Yes, indeed. And I was going to, you know, as soon as I had about a handful of these weighed out this week, I was going to really start promoting that. But since she's going to be here in the studio,
she can do that.
We can do that.
Throw that one down.
All right. Yeah. Excellent.
Till she's gone. Awesome. So let's see. Are we about to?
We done.
We got another call?
We got a. Okay. All right.
No.
Okay. Let's talk about the bear.
The bear?
Yeah.
I can't. Till she does that.
Ain't nobody been able to keep me out of trouble. Except Lisa.
Well, let's see how fast Wide Open Spaces. Oh, it's doing pretty good today.
You have trouble with that? I do too sometimes.
Sometimes here in the studio it doesn't want to work right. But anyway, got this from wideopenspaces.com. An autopsy reveals that meth, not a bear, killed a man in the Great Smoky Mountains. This is an article by David Schlake. It says, we have a serious flaw in wildlife management that we need to address. On September 7th, 2018, a Tennessee man and his friend made their way into the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in search of ginseng, a high-dollar root often used as a home medicine, but they became separated. 2 days later, searchers found the body of William Lee Hill Jr., age 30, off of Rich Mountain Road, just 2 miles north of Cades Cove, so this is up in Tennessee. A black bear was scavenging his body and was still nearby, so they assumed it was responsible for Hill's death. The National Park Service said park rangers also found syringes and drug paraphernalia near the body, according to WBIR. I don't think the bear was trying to frame the dude either.
I guarantee.
Following a series of discussions with Superintendent Cassius Cash, who named that guy? The park staff decided to euthanize the bear a few days later, which required 5 shots over 3 days.
Wait a minute.
I think they really only wanted one, but it took them 5 shots over 3 days.
Anyway.
Is the way that's written anyway.
Okay.
It wasn't like he had rabies or something.
Good Lord.
The biologists spent several days tracking the bear and were consistently challenged by weather, terrain, thick vegetation, and the elusive behavior of the bear. Park spokeswoman Dana Sowen? Told.
It's tough, isn't it?
Derek's going to make fun of me next week because I can't talk right. Dadgummit. Anyway, Dana told National Parks Traveler in October the bear was located on the second day of tracking in a thick stand of rhododendron. See, I said that right.
That was
and
good.
A biologist did attempt to shoot it, but the shot was not lethal. So what, he hit it in the arm?
I mean, dude.
Anyway. 3 days later, park staff successfully located and euthanized the bear via gunshot, which took them 4 shots. So apparently they can't shoot. Earlier this month, however, an autopsy report from Knox County Regional Forensic Center revealed Hill actually died of an accidental methamphetamine intoxication, which tends to insinuate that, you know, that there's an acceptable level.
You reckon?
Right, yeah. Before the bear ever touched him. An autopsy revealed extensive post-mortem animal predation, which means the bear ate him after he was dead, but no findings of antemortem, periamortem trauma. In other words, Mr. Hill was not attacked by the bear, the report stated. The autopsy also revealed Hill had a history of drug abuse, which included methamphetamine and other intravenous substances. This is always one of the hardest decisions a wildlife manager has to make, and one that we did not take lightly, Cash said in a news release in September. Over 2 million visitors come to the Cades Cove area annually, and there are several residential areas very close to where we found Mr. Hill's body. We could not take the risk of allowing this bear to approach or show aggression towards other people.
You know what the moral of this story is?
What?
Don't do drugs, okay? Yeah. And first, and that's the number one moral of the story. Second one is we're going to go up Tennessee, show them D&R boys how to shoot.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
Well, I'm just saying. The other part about this, and they go on to talk about black bears, and, you know, anytime bear comes in contact with a human being and, you know, it becomes a problem, they have to euthanize it. Why they have to shoot the bear? Why? And I actually kind of agree with them on this, especially if a bear has eaten, you know, human flesh, albeit dead.
Right.
He
might like it. He might like it.
It goes back to, yeah, you don't want him to get a taste for that. So,
true enough.
Unfortunate, but true. Well, that's the end of the show today. I want to thank our guest, Senator Tom Corbin. Also, Senator Stephen Goldfinch for being on the show today. Springer, take us home, brother.
God bless. Please stay dry. The sun's going to come out someday. And until it does, God bless. Take
the
care.
The sun will come
out. We'll talk to you next week.
Tomorrow.
Love you, mean it.
Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.